One of the world's worst-kept secrets is finally out in the open. A public meeting of Saudi and Israeli officials marks both of their obsessions over Iran, but also significantly reveals how much it is that we do not know about how deep these relations really go. With reports of Saudi and Israeli support for ISIL, their agreement over Egypt, Syria, Libya, etc., one can imagine that there is much both have in common. This is while the Saudis pay lip service to the Palestinian cause. In this edition of The Debate, we'll try and decipher what the relationship between Israel and the Saudi royals is. Let me start off by introducing our guests for this edition of The Debate. We're joined by political commentator Mr. Sukhan Chandan, who is joining us live from London. And we're also joined by Middle East expert Mr. Jihad Murakadeh, who is joining us live from Beirut. Gentlemen, thanks very much for joining us for this edition of The Debate. Mr. Chandan, I'll start with you. How much do Israeli and Saudi interests align?
Greetings, brother, and all to our audiences. Well, as you quipped at the beginning of your introduction, this is indeed is the world's worst-kept secret, the relationship, the strategic and long-term relationship that has been between the so-called Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and the white settler colonial state of so-called Israel as well. So the question has to be asked, why is it that these two entities have decided to make open and public their strategic unified interests now and not before? I think there's two main reasons for that. First of all, the white colonial settler state, Zionist state, has been testing the waters on what Muslim reaction, and I'm talking about that particular community, that particular section in the Muslim community, which is supporting the neo-colonial death squads in Libya, Syria, Iraq, etc., which is by no means the majority of the Ummah. But anyway, so they've been testing the waters and what the reaction might be. What we've seen since Libya, but particularly from Syria post the early 2011, is that the white colonial Zionist state has been openly teaming up with death squads who are using and abusing Islamic garb to perpetuate their interest. Indeed, the United Nations themselves have made a formal complaint against the white colonial Zionist state that why has it replaced the UN personnel in the Golan Heights with Jabhat Nusra, a pro-colonial death squad? So, and the reaction amongst the ground support for these death squads has been no reaction against this open alliance between the white colonial Zionist state and these death squads. So that's one reason why they can afford to come out publicly. And the second reason I think that they've come out publicly on this is that, and your intro kind of alluded to this, is there's great alarm in the corridors of Riyadh and Tel Aviv in relation to the Islamic Republic of Iran's leadership of the resistance against neocolonialism and Zionism in the region. Things are coming to a head historically, and so these two entities have seen it and understood that it's worth their while for those two reasons to now openly team up.
Okay, Mr. Murakadeh, I'll put the same question to you essentially. What has changed for the Saudis to be able to come out so publicly and stand beside Israelis essentially?
I think that the major reason is that the geopolitical situation in the Middle East has changed tremendously since the so-called Hezbollah victory in 2006. Since 2006,
so-called.
If you look at the situation in the Middle East and then since 2011, you realize that there have been forces which are totally opposed to within the Arab world, opposed to each other, and then of course regional powers have intervened, whether it is Iran, Israel, or Turkey. In this situation, one has to work out who is my foe and who is less my foe, who is my enemy and who is less my enemy. And then it is a matter of where are my objectives, who do I defend against, and the question is legitimate today, considering that the regime in Saudi Arabia feels that it has been threatened, both in Saudi Arabia, in Bahrain and the Sunnis in Iraq have been threatened by actions of other anti-regime or anti-Sunni forces. In this regard, when the U.S. is going to sign, if they do, an agreement with Iran, we will come to it, sir. If the UN is going, the U.S. is the P5 plus one is going to agree, make an agreement with Iran, chances are that Saudi Arabia and the Gulf countries will feel threatened by a free Iran. So in this sense, and so Israel also would feel threatened. So basically, both sides feel threatened by the same foe, which they do not consider as an enemy, but as an opposing force. So it is only natural for them to unite forces against the immediate threat as opposed to a remote threat. The immediate threat, in their opinion, in the opinion of Saudi Arabia and the Gulf countries, is Iran, and they want the United States to explain it. Okay, in the opinion of Israel, they continue to say that our immediate threat is Iran. So basically, their problem is not whether it's Israel or Saudi Arabia. The problem is we are facing a common enemy, or a common threat, rather.
Okay, Mr. Chandan, I'm a bit confused because, you know, I'm wondering about the elephant in the room here, and that's the Palestinian cause, isn't it? And where does this leave that cause then?
Yeah, quite. And I think, I mean, you know, our colleague in Beirut and I are on different sides of the metaphorical barricades in the political struggle in the region and globally. And I'm surprised to hear it was a quote-unquote so-called victory of the Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah in 2006. But anyway, at least there's one small detail in which our colleague in Beirut and I agree upon, that 2006, the victory of the Lebanese resistance Hezbollah against the white colonial settler Zionist state's aggression did change certain tactics and policy of the regional and global powers, i.e. it was the great redirection against the Islamic Republic and its regional allies. Now quite, the Palestinian struggle and the quest for Palestinian justice is the elephant in the room. But I think this whole Arab sting has strategically been played out by the Gulf monarchies and their senior colleagues in London, Washington and Paris, and it has to be said, Tel Aviv as well, that this whole Arab sting was in their design was pushed out to weaken the Palestinian struggle. And I think Tel Aviv and Riyadh now feel that the Palestinian struggle has been so weakened, that the Palestinians' regional allies have been so degraded, that now they can come out with this open alliance. Interestingly, and I don't think it's a coincidence, that the so-called the death squad of so-called ISIS has been trying to create some propaganda for itself in Gaza, in throwing a few ping pong balls with rockets at the Zionist state, and trying to posture as some defenders. They're not defenders. This is just utter pathetic posturing, but pretending to be some defenders of the Palestinian cause. And the reason I say it's no coincidence, because what Riyadh and Tel Aviv and their senior colleagues in the West want is a pardon the pun, but a final solution for the Palestinian people. That won't take place because the struggle for justice of the Palestinians with their regional and global allies is unstoppable and cannot be eradicated. But they do feel, and there is some truth in their feelings, that the Palestinian struggle has been degraded, and Gaza is the last bastion of Palestinian resistance within the Palestinian lands, and they will be looking to create further violent divisions and using these neo-colonial death squads in pursuit of their strategic aims. And we all know that Qatar and Saudi Arabia and other regional monarchies, along with Tel Aviv and their senior allies in the West, will be using exactly death squads like Nusra, Ahrar al-Sham, ISIS, etc., to facilitate their strategic interests. Indeed, all their strategic interests of late have been delivered, not by themselves directly, but covertly by these death squads.
Okay, gentlemen, hold on to your thoughts. I just want to go to our viewers now who have been taking part in this conversation online. Let's listen to some of their comments, and we'll be right back.
B5 Israel and Saudi Arabia, that have no diplomatic relations, met 5 times secretly to discuss Iran, which both consider a regional threat, especially given the approaching deadline for the nuclear deal with the international community, Israeli Daily Jerusalem Post reported on Friday. It's a disgrace. We all know the Saudi ruling elites supported Zionists. It is a nice thing. Arabs have now realized that Israel is not their enemy. The real enemy is Iran. They need to move close to Israel as the most powerful country in the Middle East for help. No difference. Both are killers of innocent Muslims in Gaza and Yemen. Now that their relation is getting exposed, it will become clear that the goal of both is the same. Two sides of the same coin. Both are morally bankrupt. Seems like Saudi Arabia and Israel are envious of Iran. Is this picture true or is it Photoshop?
And we do have a response, in fact, for that final comment of Mr. Ahmed Faraz. The photo is real, we can assure you, and the meeting did take place on Thursday, June the 4th, 2015, at the Council on Foreign Relations in Washington, D.C. The photo was taken by Kaveh Sardari, who is a photographer of the Council of Foreign Relations, also known as the CFR. So this meeting did take place, as we've been reporting here on Press TV. Let me get back to Mr. Murakadi now. Mr. Murakadi, I wanted to ask you as well, when it comes to this convergence, it seems, of Israeli and Saudi interests, where does this leave the Palestinians?
First of all, there has been a convergence, not a convergence. There has been a Saudi plan that going back to 2002, whereby the Saudis and the Arab countries, including Yasser Arafat at the time, agreed to recognize the state of Israel as long as Israel accepted a Palestinian state in the West Bank and Gaza, which the Israelis did not accept. And this issue is still alive, because the Saudis were very clear in saying there is no way we're going to have any diplomatic relations with you unless you accept this particular point. Now, the point I want to make is about Gaza and Hamas and those forces supported by the so-called resistance movement. They do not accept the existence of Israel. So on the one hand, this is just to point out the fact that you have a part of the Arabs who accept Israel within 1967 borders as long as there is a Palestinian state, and a part of the Palestinians also accept the same thing, and you have Hamas, who does not accept at all the idea of an Israeli state. They want the whole of Palestine back. And you have people supporting them in this regard. So these people are totally, the Hamas people are totally at odds with the regards, with the opinion of the rest of the Arab countries who have put forward, including Yasser Arafat in 2002, who have put forward a plan which recognizes the state of Israel, provided you have a Palestinian state. This was back in 2002. It is still on the table. The Israelis have a problem because they have not accepted it, and Hamas has a problem because Hamas wants the whole of Palestine. These are facts. It's not even for the discussion. Now, with regards to the Saudis and Israel, I want to ask a very simple question. What made this situation come about? It is not something that was that just happened overnight. The rapprochement or the common threat or whatever you want to call it. Why is it that Saudi Arabia and other Gulf countries felt compelled to get closer to what they consider as being a lesser threat? This is a point. Why?
Okay, let me put that question then to Mr. Chandan, who's been shaking his head for a while now, so I want to get him in. Mr. Chandan, why is it that they see Israel as a lesser threat?
I think our colleague in Beirut is a good example of someone trying to conduct political somersaults and contortions to try and square the circle, which is impossible. I mean, we've just had a criticism. I mean, I've had criticisms of Hamas, but you know, hardly you can criticize Hamas for demanding back the usurped land by the Zionists and their senior colleagues in the West. You know, you can't criticize them for wanting back their land that's been occupied by a colonial settler power. I'm very surprised to hear that anyone is criticizing any Palestinian group or individual for demanding back the rights of their own land from which they've been expelled. And also, it's a bit of a
entertaining.
Dear sir, you always interrupt me, you know, when we're on the show together. I never interrupt you, so please allow me to say my piece and you
can respond. Yes, but here we reach a point,
please. We can't be dealing in abstractions about the Arab Peace Initiative, so-called, when the whole West Bank is nearly totally colonized by colonial settler settlements over there. So any kind of peace plan for the 67 borders is finished. It's totally history. It's gone. It's nowhere to be seen. It's in the past. We have to deal with the situation now where the colonial settler state has been colonizing even more thoroughly and saturating the West Bank. So we've actually got to come up with new ideas and new strategic paths
of
struggle.
What do you suggest?
And yes, the resistance axis is exactly providing that. The last point, our colleague in Beirut talks about the common interests. I mean, do the forces in Lebanon who've been supporting the Arab sting consider what's happened in Syria to be in their interest? No, this whole operation is coming for Lebanon as well. Does the Turkish government think what they've done in feeding tens of thousands of death squads?
I'm sorry, I blame
Lebanon. Does the Turkish government and state think by feeding in hundreds of thousands of death squads into Syria
is somehow in their own interest?
No,
I am in Lebanon.
Turkey is going to be consumed.
And you are saying that I do not agree. The majority of the Lebanese people agree with the demise of the Syrian regime. We all agree that we do not want Bashar al-Assad anymore. What are you telling me?
I mean, as we well know, that the defenders of Lebanon, the defenders of the Lebanese people who have defended the people of Lebanon like no others,
who are
that's
the
Lebanese
I am the defender
have come
of Lebanon.
To the assistance.
Who is the defender
the
of
assistance.
Lebanon?
So we can't have a dialogue if there's continuous interruptions of each other, you know? But, but Lebanese Hezbollah, who are the defenders of Lebanon,
I mean,
who defended that country for decades against Zionist aggression. We're not having
who
a debate.
Are
you
the
keep
defenders?
Interrupting me, and it's not conducive to anything.
Who are the
anything.
Defenders of Lebanon?
So really, if the Kingdom
but
of Saudi
are
Arabia...
I am the defender of Lebanon. Your friends are not the defenders of Lebanon.
Sir, no, you're not.
I'm sorry.
You're deeply implicated in
okay,
supporting...
Okay, gentlemen, we generally just have a minute left, so I do apologize for interrupting this.
You are deciding who are the defenders of Lebanon. I am Lebanese. I'm telling you, I am the defender of Lebanon.
I apologize, Mr. McCarthy. I realize you're passionate, and we can obviously have this debate about Lebanon at a later date as well, and we can have both of you gentlemen on. Just a minute left, so I want to give both of you just 30 seconds, if you can, to respond to this last point that I wanted to get to. The other elephant in the room is the Obama administration and the apparent tensions between the Obama administration and Israel. How does this convergence between Saudi Arabia and Israel, especially publicly, play into that? Mr. Morikade first.
Can you please repeat the question? How did the Obama administration play?
Well, people are saying that there's tensions between the Obama administration and Israel. Now that we have the Saudis coming out, standing beside the Israelis, how do you feel about that?
I am on the side of the Obama administration anyway, to start with. And I think that with regards to the problems between the Obama administration and Israel, these are problems between the Obama administration and Israel. It has nothing to do with the rapprochement between Saudi Arabia and Israel. Probably the Obama administration, and I would tend to defend them, see eye to eye when it comes to what is the interest in the region. On the other hand, I do apologize for interrupting you, Mr. Morikade.
We're over time. Mr. Shandan, go ahead. How do you feel about this?
Yeah, I think obviously they're in panic mode, Riyadh and Tel Aviv, so they're trying to hug each other and very publicly much closer. But, you know, it's not in the interest of the people of Saudi Arabia to team up with Tel Aviv and the leading NATO countries to destroy the whole region. No, unless they think what's been delivered in Syria and Libya and elsewhere is somehow in the interest of the people. It's not the interest of the people of Lebanon or Palestine or Saudi Arabia or anyone else. Actually, people should come to the support of the resistance axis to defend. This is the only force available with all our criticisms.
Okay.
It's the only force available.
Mr. Chandan, I do apologize for interrupting you. We'll have to continue this conversation at a later date. That was Mr. Sukran Chandan, political commentator, who was speaking to us live from London. And we were also joined with Mr. Jihad Murakadeh, a Middle East expert. He'd been speaking to us live from Beirut. And of course, viewers, we do appreciate you joining us as well. Until next time, good night.